What number is this, Chip?
Episode 10, More of the Monkeys, Side 2, and an interview with Emily Dolenz.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
And with that familiar music, you know what podcast you're listening to. It is, of course, Zilch, your Monkeys podcast. And today, we're doing the opening with a little extra special guest here, Melanie Mitchell. Welcome to the show. You're doing the opening with us today.
Hi, Ken.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
And we're also joined by Sarah Clark and Craig Cohen. Welcome, guys.
Great to be here.
I got the telegram that you needed somebody to come monkey around.
Well, and you showed up, so that's good. We've got a flurry of activity going on here, an interview with Cersei Link, and More of the Monkeys Side 2. Sarah's working on her fandom roundtable, and you guys are working on the commentary tracks, so it's just going to be a really exciting time coming up in the next month or two for all the Zilch listeners, so glad you are here. You guys ready to dive into the mailbag?
Yes, sir.
All right,
hit
here
the music.
We go.
All right.
Cue it.
P.O. Box 9847.
Well, Melanie, since you're our guest of honor today, and this is your first time at the Zilch Roundtable, this makes you part of the League of Monkey Men. So,
oh, goody.
There you go. You've got the official papers and your Monkey Man outfit. Do you wear
it
the
fits,
fake,
too.
Yeah, do you wear the fake glasses with no lenses in them?
Actually, I already had a pair.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell anyone.
Oh, cool. We will be giving out flying lessons later because some people have had problems with that. So, welcome to Zilch, and would you read the first listener response for us?
Certainly. It's titled A Great Listen for Road Trips or Anytime by Catherine McGann. It's a 5-star rating. She writes, last week I was lucky enough to hit the road and follow Mickey to a couple of his solo shows. I finally had the opportunity to listen to this amazing podcast all about a band worth talking about. I love the agree-to-disagree nature of the conversations. It's not about being right or wrong. We are all right because we all appreciate the Monkeys.
Hear, hear.
The show includes fun guests, interesting trivia, and rare music clips. Thank you for a wonderful podcast and making a 16-hour road trip a breeze.
What a great review, and thank you for mentioning the agree-to-disagree kind of thing. Nobody can be wrong about the Monkeys except for Craig Cohen.
And I normally am.
No, we're just kidding. Seriously. We love what we love. We like what we like. And that's all there is to it. And if you have a favorite song on an album that someone doesn't like, then that's all cool. It's all good. The important thing is what we have in common. Not our differences, but the thing we love. And in this case, it's the Monkeys. Sarah, would you take the next one?
Sure. The next one is from Jimbo118. The title of it is Brilliant and About Time. Says, I look forward to every episode, every in all caps, yay. My earliest memories of the Monkees were from the early 70s, watching the reruns on Saturday morning from the comfort of my high chair. I went to the reunion concert in 86 when the Monkees were joined by the Grassroots and Herman's Hermits, minus Peter Noon. Two standouts from that show. Number one, Randy Skousgett was mind-blowing. Number two, the stagehands wore green wool hats and fake black mutton chop sideburns. Ooh, I like that. The spirit of Nez was there during the finale of Listen to the Band, but his absence was so painfully obvious. Keep up the awesome work. Thank you, Jimbo.
Thank you, Jimbo. That's awesome. All right, our next one, Craig Cohen, why don't you take it, sir?
Sure. Simply titled Zilch, a Monkeys podcast. It's a 5-star rating from Soupy McStockman, and it reads, back at the ripe old age of 6 years old, I remember the Beatles cartoons on TV, and the Monkees show was on as well. I have been a fan ever since, and as a longtime follower of Ken Mill's shows, I was thrilled to learn he was going to do a Monkees show. Keep up the good work, brother. Appreciate y'all.
Wow, that is awesome. And
right on.
And, of course, folks, when you give us these iTunes reviews, if you want to put your real name in there, that's cool, too. I figured out Petey Puddin'Pork is and tracked him down. So this is his review. His name is actually Pete Blanchford. So glad to have you on the show there, Pete. And here is his review. How do you like it? More of the Monkees. Remember that song in the 70s? More.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
That was excellent. I didn't know you could sing.
Surprise.
Well, Craig can sing. He's a solo artist. He sings solo. No one can hear him. And he's also a tenor. He sings about 10 or 15 miles away. Pete Blatchford says, an insightful, in-depth, and often witty examination of this sophomore effort by the Monkees. I admit that I am only familiar with some of the hits on this album, Mary Mary, I'm Not Your Stepping Stone in particular. My impression is that this was a bit of a rush job in order to get more product into the hands of their ever-growing fan base. Too bad, because based on your critique, this should have been a much better album. Given your discussion of the poor mixes on More of the Monkees, I would love to hear it in a good quality mono mix. I do love me some mono, and maybe a version of that substituted higher quality songs for the weaker tracks. Anyhow, great job again, and I look forward to the next podcast. So we know he's listening. We're just glad to hear from all you folks.
Hi, this is Christian Nesman.
And Cersei Ling.
And we want you to tune into ConcertWindow.com September 13th.
At 10 a.m.
To see us play live from our very own living room.
That's Pacific Standard Time.
Yes, please do it. And listen to Zilch,
a Monkees podcast.
Today, we had a good day on Facebook. We asked this question, what is your favorite song on side two of More of the Monkees? Would you guys like to guess at how the voting is going right now?
I have to recuse myself because I just voted.
Oh, you just did. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to check it out. I'm going to guess The Kind of Girl I Could Love.
That's what I would guess too, Sarah.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Ooh.
Darn.
Sometime in the Morning is the number one song voted as of this point by you, the Zilch listeners on Facebook.
Well, you can't go wrong normally with Goffin and King.
Well, as much as I am a Nez head, I had to still go with Sometime in the Morning. It's just a lush and beautiful song. But the second track was The Kind of Girl I Could Love, Look Out, Here Comes Tomorrow, I'm a Believer, in fourth place. In fifth place, Laugh. And the song that got absolutely zero or no votes was
Zilch?
On the Day We Fall in Love. It will be. You'll see. For all the people who are going to say, how come nobody likes that song? I don't know. Why didn't you vote for it? Ghosty Timmers will join us later with his little rebuttal and his defense of the song On the Day Ooh. We Fall in Love. So we'll be doing that. Fred Velez, one of our contributors, and when I'm giving him the official title of Ambassador of Zilch, he's another Monkey Man that we talked about, one of the League of Monkey Men, but he's kind of like our ambassador. He seems to go everywhere and meet everybody, so he's now out there letting people know about the show and getting interviews for us. And here is Fred Velez, author of A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You. And he's interviewing Emily Dolenz at the Brady Bunch Convention in 2014, just a few days ago. Take it away, Fred.
I'm Fred Velez. My new book, A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective, chronicles my experiences with the Monkees from the 1960s into today, along with stories by other fans and how the Monkees touched our lives. A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective by Fred Velez, available on Amazon.com, createspace.com, smashwords.com, Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble Nook, and other print and ebook outlets.
This is Emily Dolenz, and you're listening to Zilch, the podcast full of the Monkees.
Hi, folks. This is Fred Velez for the Zilch podcast at the Brady Bunch Convention, and I'm sitting next to the very lovely and wonderful Emily Dolenz. Hello, Emily.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very fine, thank you. You're here at the convention, and you're selling some wonderful artwork and photographs here. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. I'm selling my photographs, and I'm also selling my one-of-a-kind pieces of artwork. They're deconstructed from my photographs, add poetry and watercolor, and each piece is one-of-a-kind.
Mm-hmm. And that could be, people can buy that at your website, right?
Absolutely. On my Etsy store, E. Dolenz Photos is my address on Etsy, and Emily Dolenz Photography is my Facebook page to find out more information about new pieces of art I'm doing.
And you also got photographs here of some lovely horses. Can you tell us about those?
Absolutely. I am donating $10 of each of the sale to the horses to the Davy Jones Memorial Fund, which will help keep his love for his horses alive, and they keep them well and happy. And the photograph itself is of two horses unrelated to him, but it just fit well, and it seemed like it was a good photograph to be a part of that. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously with the name Dolenz, we know who your dad is.
Yes, Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees is my dad.
Righto. Can you tell us a little bit about when you first realized through fans that your dad was like the guy?
Well, yeah, I don't really remember exactly when I realized who my dad was or how influential he was. During the tours in 86 and 89, when I was 3 and 6 years old, I was very, you know, I saw these massive crowds coming to see him, and I would see like VH1 specials, and those kind of highlighted to me how huge the Monkees were and influential. And also hearing all the fan stories about, you know, it meant this to them and it meant that to them, and all of their stories. But I don't remember the exact time when I realized who he was or what the Monkees, how big the Monkees were. It was more of just, it was my life. So I took a little pinch of salt, and that's how I grew up. So.
Right. A lot of fans will remember you from the Dad Was Then, This Is Now video, mm-hmm. with you dancing with your two sisters.
Yep.
And also the close-up of you and Mickey hugging and all that. Any specific memories that stand out for you from that particular tour?
No, not really. I mean, I was still pretty young. I mean, it's just all a bit of a blur of tour buses and hotels and stages and being on stage. I do remember one of the tours, I'm not sure if it was that tour, but it happened to be like Jessica, Annabelle, and Charlotte, me and Georgia, and Amy were all on one tour together. So we came out on stage doing the Monkees Walk together.
Oh my goodness.
As the Monkettes, they called us. They introduced us as the Monkettes. So I remember those kind of small moments.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't tell you which tour that was because it's all a bit of a blur.
Right. You mentioned your sisters. You have how many again?
Three sisters. Amy, who lives in Los Angeles. She's my oldest sister. Charlotte. And Georgia, who is with my dad making the furniture. She's doing Dolenz and Daughters furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So three of us. Sorry, four of us. Me included is four.
There you go. That's the four, folks.
Yes.
What were your impressions of your dad's other three partners, the other Monkees?
They were uncles to me. They were my family on tour growing up and everything. We were so young, we grew up with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss Davey dearly. And every time I see Peter and Mike now, you know, it's just like seeing family members. They were just so special to us.
And the other Monkey children, you mentioned them as everybody's family.
Absolutely, yes. Tali and Sarah, I didn't see as much growing up because they were older than us. But Jessica and Annabelle, we grew up with. And yeah, I mean, we all had the same experience in different ways, but we all were part of the Monkees. And so we were all their children together. It unites us. It has a similar experience. So
right.
It's a lot of fun.
What was your impressions regarding like seeing the TV show, your dad in the TV show, and then comparing it? Were any comparison like to your dad as you knew him, and then from who you saw on TV?
Well, yes, I knew he was he's always that silly. He's always that funny and goofy kind of thing. So I saw a lot of who my father was in the character he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, there's a lot of private world. Like, he's just, in my mind, he's just my dad. He's just a regular person who makes me breakfast in the morning as well. So there's a lot of similarities and discrepancies because he is Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees in one place, and then he's also just Daddy
right.
in the other place.
Now, you have a unique position seeing your dad and film in different stages of his life. So what?
Yes.
What kind of, you know, how do you feel about that? Having that footage.
I love it. I love it because it's not very many people have, in my age group, have their own parents in on film. I mean, it just wasn't around then, so not a lot of people did have that much footage. I mean, it was around, but it wasn't as much for the general population. So I love seeing my dad on Circus Boy. He's 10 years old, and I get to see him in like acting. And then obviously when he was 20 doing the Monkees, when I was 20 in the age group he was in, that was a very kind of moment for me to see my dad at his age, and I was the same age as when he was doing it. So throughout the years it means different things to me, but it was very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Was there any like specific moments like the Hollywood Walk of Fame ceremony and the Pop Music Hall of Fame? I mean, I'm talking about the Walk of Fame, yes, on Hollywood and the Pop Music Hall of Fame, that you said, wow, you know.
Yes, both of those events are amazing to me. And those kind of statements where my dad is recognized for what he's been in. And even in the, you know, VH1 specials where they do all the facts and figures of how much they sold and how popular they were, and they sold this many out of, and they broke this record of this, you know, and it, that those moments I'm like, wow, he was a part of something very big and very influential to the times, and that's always, those moments are very special to me.
At one point you thought that he was with the Beatles.
Well, yes, there was a time when he was, so he'd sing us lullabies, he would sing Bye Bye Blackbird and some of the Beatles songs at sleep, and I used to think he had made those songs up. I didn't realise Beatles and the Monkees, because we grew up in England, so the Beatles were in England. I thought he might have been in the Beatles because he was English with me, and he very quickly told me that that was not correct, and that he was in the Monkees, and get it, you know, corrected me basically. But he would sing all the different songs. So,
mm-hmm. Now you got to know a lot of his friends, like Paul McCartney or that.
I think I may have met them, but Amy was older, so Amy saw a lot more of those kind of people growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew up in England, so it was a different lifestyle.
Right.
I mean, I remember more in my later, like, adolescence, meeting more of the kind of producers and directors that's what he was doing at that time in the early 80s, 90s and stuff.
Right.
So I saw more of those kind of people. But I, you know, my memory is that I was able to meet some of the cast of Friends once, because my dad was on the set, so we got to go along. And that was very kind of fun at that time.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we've met some different people throughout our lives. It's been a long ride.
Oh, yes. You know, I know you had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Touring with your dad and the other three Monkees and all.
Yes.
And do you go on your dad's solo tours?
I try to. I mean, now as an adult, when I have a full-time job, so it's not the same. You know, I don't have my summers off like I did when I was a kid. So any concerts I can get to, I go to, because it's just nostalgic. It's being part of my, you know, my dad's life. But it doesn't happen as often as like I would like it,
mm-hmm.
just because I have my own situation now.
Right. And, of course, we got your artwork and all that. Could,
yes.
Let the fans out there know again where they could find your artwork.
Emily Dolan's Photography on Facebook and Eve Dolan's Photos on Etsy store. The Equestrian photo is still on Etsy store as well, so you can buy everything on the Equestrian.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Emily. It was great talking to you, and enjoy the rest of the convention.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Bye-bye.
And now here's Ghosty Timmers with his defense of the song On the Day We Fall in Love.
Sometimes it's hard to say the right words, even when they're written in your heart. Most songs have words, but this one, which is written for someone I don't even know yet, I can't find the right way to say the things I want to say. So there are no words, just a melody for a girl.
I come to you with the express purpose of defending the song The Day We Fall in Love. I'll have to crawl over the veritable mountains of contempt that have been no doubt hurled in the direction of this song to do so, but I have a point, and I'm going to make it. Now, I hate to break this to you, and to all the listeners of Zilch, but a song, or more accurately, a spoken word piece, such as The Day We Fall in Love, was not intended for a bunch of guys in their 40s! No. This song was intended for the audience who would be buying this album in droves. An audience, some would say an army, of 12-year-old girls. The same little girls who bought the very similar-sounding Melody for an Unknown Girl by Paul Revere and the Raiders, because they wanted to hear Raiders heartthrob Mark Lindsay whisper sweet nothings in their ear. The same 12-year-old girls who, in 1970, bought the Partridge Family's Doesn't Somebody Want to Be Wanted so they could listen to David Cassidy gently coo, "Where is love? Tell me, where is love?" You see, The Day We Fall in Love didn't happen in a vacuum. It wasn't some egregious left turn in the history of popular music. It was fairly common practice to have the teen dream of the moment recite a ribbon of romantic verse to satisfy the longings of 12-year-old girls. And let's face it, these little girls were the engine of the record business. Had I been there in 1967, had I been Don Kirshner, I too would have insisted that this song be on more of the Monkees, because those little girls were the audience for that album. What's more, so many of these young girls would go their whole lives without ever hearing a real boy talk about the day they would fall in love. It's sad but true. For many of these little girls, what lied ahead were years of loneliness and despair. But for one moment, one shining moment, they believed that Davy Jones, the boy of their dreams, the one they wrote fan letters to, was actually talking about them and to them. And you would deny these poor girls, many of them with nothing but years of misery ahead of them, you would deny them that opportunity? When you say that you wish The Day We Fall in Love had been dropped from the album, do you know what you're doing? You are spitting in the faces of all those little girls. I would ask you to look inside that cold, dead heart of yours for that one shred of human decency that you thought you had long ago killed off. Find it. Hold on to it. And just remember the tear-stained faces of those children.
Sometimes it's hard to say the right words, even when they're written in your heart. Most songs have words, but this one, which is written for someone I don't even know yet, there are no words. I can't find the right way to say the things I want to say. So there's just a melody for a girl.
And the same thing goes for Christmas.
And now we continue with our discussion of more of the Monkees. Here we go, side two. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Tonight, joining us is Craig Smith. Hey, what's up?
Hi, everybody. How you
hey,
doing?
What's shaking? Craig Cohen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm very good, Ken. Thanks, as always, for having me.
Jeff Hewlett.
Oh, fantastic. So happy to be here again.
This next song's written by Neil Diamond. And of course, Look Out, Here Comes Tomorrow. Jeff Hewlett, your thoughts on this track?
Where to begin? This song is the first one on this album that makes me want to go take classes in physics, all things related, so I can build a time machine, buy a Louisville Slugger, and go back and beat the guy who mixed this about the head and neck with a bat.
Wow.
Because this is a fantastic song that suffers so much from the production. This song could be so much better than it is. All of the music in the stereo version, all of the backing band tracks are mixed in the center and sound kind of crappy, honestly. It's a lazy stereo mix. The remaster helped a bit, but it still sounds so lazy to me for a song that I think is a fantastic upbeat Davy song, probably his best song on the record. The chorus to this song is so great. I love the juxtaposition between the verses and the chorus, the urgency in the chorus of the ramp up with the I See All Kinds of Sorrow. If Davy on the show had a song to talk about the lament of being loved by every chick on every episode, this would be the one, right? Because he's got to choose between all of these girls. And this is his dilemma of all of these great, beautiful chicks that he's been with on every show. This song really encapsulates all of that. And if you own the deluxe Rhino remaster of this album, listen to the TV version. And that version has a phenomenal stereo mix. It was recorded in October of 66. So theoretically, the album version could have had a mix similar to what was put out as a TV mix. So there's really no excuse to me as why this song couldn't sound as good as it possibly could. And it's a shame to me. And I'll have another rant later on about another song that I think really got hamstrung by the production. But I really think this song could have been done a lot better if they had given the proper time and care to creating a proper production and mix.
Take a breath, man. It's going to be okay.
I know, man. I know. It's so groovy.
Backing vocals by Davy Jones, Mickey Dolenz, and Peter Tork, with lead vocals by Davy. I'm surprised this song wasn't a single. Aren't you guys?
Should have been.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I think Not Your Stepping Stone should have been its own single, but what do I know, guys? You know, but I really think that this was a mistake not to have this be a single. Craig Cohen, your thoughts on Look Out, Here Comes Tomorrow.
the first of two Neil Diamond songs on the album that, to me, really sound like Neil Diamond songs. And that's not to take anything away from Neil Diamond as a songwriter, but you hear him a lot in this song, in the melody, in the song structure. And I mean, yeah, I guess you're going to hear that when a guy writes a song. But for me, this always sort of plays as the Monkees doing a Neil Diamond song as opposed to the Monkees singing a song. That said, it's a great song, and I really, really enjoy it. I think Davey has a great vocal. I wouldn't agree that this is his best song on the album. I think Hold On Girl would be his best song on the album. Just a really good track overall. It's always great to have multiple Monkees on backing vocals.
So what the heck have you all been doing for the last 37 years?
Craig Smith, your thoughts?
A great song. Some geeky minutia. I believe that this is the Monkees track that over the years has been mixed the most, remixed the most for subsequent releases. There are 10 mixes of Lookout, Here Comes Tomorrow.
Wow.
I just want to say, and this is just semantics, Jeff, what is called the TV version on the deluxe CD is not the TV mix. The TV mix that's in the episode is mono and does not appear, as of yet, anywhere except that episode. They've gone back to the multi-tracks and they've mixed new versions, including the organ solo that you hear in the episode, but they're, for the most part, newer mixes that have brought that to the fore. The same with, there's a bit of Peter Tork narration that happens in some of them. But
love that, by the way.
Yeah, it is great. The 2006 Deluxe Edition has two remixes that were done at that time. Again, Andrew went back and found all of the session tapes for this and was able to extract each track. Because for those that don't know, the reason why the production on this album sounds so horrible in spots is because you had four-track tape. So you would record your three tracks, bounce them all to one, or take the four and bounce them to a new tape. And now those tracks are locked in mono. And then you have three more tracks to record vocals or lead instruments or whatever. So he was able to go through all of the various stages of multi-track tape and sync them up for what, you know, for the first time, a full fidelity stereo mix. And so on the 2006 edition, you have two new stereo mixes, one which has the Peter Tork spoken bits and one which doesn't. But those are great to hear the song. It's like hearing the song new. It's like having a veil lifted off the speakers for the first time. I'm usually one to stick with the original mixes, but in some of these cases, the newer mixes are the way to go just because they sound so clean. And this is an example of it. So definitely the deluxe edition.
I totally agree with that. And I agree. I am in the same boat as you, as I usually stick with the original mixes as they were intended to be heard. But in this particular instance, for this particular album, if anybody from Rhino is listening to this, please, for this new edition that's coming out at the end of this year, go back and give us this great stereo mix that I know you can do. I will be the first person in line to buy that. Whatever
they
can do.
A lot of these tapes are lost.
I know. But whatever they can do, whatever is possible, please do it, because there's so many great tracks in this album that I'd love to hear in a better format.
Yeah, there's one coming up.
Yes, there definitely is.
Whatever would you be referring to?
I will hold off on that until we get there. It's a couple of songs away. I think that Craig and I might be talking about the same song, I hope.
I would bet on it.
Okay. I would bet too.
Well, we'll get there when we get there. The next track is The Kind of Girl I Could Love. And this has some unique distinction about it on this album. You guys want to take a guess at what that could be?
Written by Michael?
Country song?
Well, it is written by Michael Nesmith and Roger Atkins. That's true. Next.
Produced by Michael?
Yes, it is produced by Michael Nesmith.
The only country song on the album?
Well, there's that too.
Elvis guitar player James Burton's on it?
Yes, along with Glenn Campbell.
It was recorded during the first session back in June. I shouldn't say the first session, because there was a session that nothing was used from, but the session that also produced All the King's Horses and I Don't Think You Know Me back in June of 66 during the first album. This song was recorded on that day and was not used on the first album. Correct. Is that what you'd be referring to?
Not yet. Okay. No. And it is the last Nesmith collaboration with another composer, but...
Oh, I got it!
Yes.
All Four Monkeys sing backing vocals.
All Four Monkeys appear on this one track.
Took me a minute. The girl. I knew there was one song on this album.
I'm going to dispute that.
Go ahead.
I'm fairly certain that the version with... And I could be completely wrong... But I think that the version with all four monkeys singing is featured on the deluxe edition of the first album. I'm not sure that on the second album version it's all the monkeys on background vocals. The 2006 version of deluxe version of the first album had alternate backing vocals that was definitely all of the monkeys. I'm not entirely sure that this version has all of them.
Well, in my world it does.
Mine right. too, Ken.
But it is the last Nesmith collaboration with another composer. It's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. Wow. So, Craig Smith, take this one.
A great song. I pretty much said a lot that I was going to say about it already because of the backing vocals discussion. But yeah, it's an interesting one because it's got that early Mike voice, you know. It's before his tonsil surgery and before his voice changed. It's a very young sounding Mike, and I've always thought it was interesting and maybe a little out of place because I'm insane. I group this in with the stuff from the first album because of when it was recorded. So for me, it kind of sticks out like a sore thumb when I listen to it in the context of the album. But in terms of a great, great song, this totally is one, and one that I was very happy to see Mike pull out on the last Monkees tour and do live for the first time ever, I believe.
That's great.
Great, great tune.
Craig Cohen.
Yeah, I can't really say more than Craig did. It is a tremendous song. And I actually think when we talk about, or when I talked about the sort of formatting of this album, I think this would be a great start to side two. You end with Not Your Stepping Stone and then transition to this. I think that's a really good transition. That really, really works for me. It's always good to hear these Nesmith sort of rockers, you know, with the country infused aspect. yeah, how can you argue with, you know, the dueling guitars of, you know, James Burton and Glenn Campbell? And I think there's some other guys on there, too. And I believe the legendary Hal Blaine is also on drums on a version of this song as well. So just a really, really great pedigree to this song, and a song that I include on just about every Monkees mix that I make.
How could you not? the drums are just killer in this. Just the energy, it just crackles. Just amazing. Jeff, your thoughts?
I kind of lumped this in, like what Craig Smith said, I lumped this in with the tracks from the first album, and it's kind of a shame that Mike didn't get two country tracks on this record like he did on the first, but I put this kind of on par with Sweet Young Thing from the first record. Papa Jean's Blues to me is still the number one country track from those first two records, but this definitely is on par with Sweet Young Thing for me. But again, this is another one of those songs that suffers from its production, I think, with most of the music being squished into the center of the mix. You've got some fill guitar going on in the left channel. You've got background vocals shoved all the way to the right. And I think that overall, some of the background vocals feel overdriven and kind of poorly produced. And this would have been another one of those tracks, had they done a great treatment on it, could have sounded a heck of a lot better. That's not to say it's not a great song, because it really is, and I love it, but I think that the production once again hampers the version on the album.
Here you go. This is from the second album.
Track, The Day We Fall in Love.
It will be.
Yes. My grandmother once told me, if I have nothing good to say, well, I will turn it over to Jeff Hewlett. What are your thoughts on The Day We Fall in Love?
Wow. I'm so glad you let me go first on this, Ken, because I have a feeling that I'm going to be the only person who even remotely defends this song. See?
Maybe not.
I hear a lot of people biting their tongues right now. And that's not to say this is a great song. But I will say that anybody who didn't see this song coming has another thing coming. I mean, this is pretty much the direct follow-up to the ballad version of I Want to Be Free from the first record. You had to expect that Davey would throw up another song like this, or they'd throw him on another song like this. I'm glad that this didn't become the trend, because I think that all of the stuff that Davey does after this is far, far superior. But it does feel like a natural progression. This is what most people, I think, would say was one of the worst Monkey songs that has ever been put to record. And I would dispute that by saying that I think there is one song that's worse than this. I don't know if I should go into that now or wait till the actual album comes out, because it'll be a while from now.
If it's one that I think it might be, it was recorded during this time.
Oh, no, you're way off then.
Oh, really?
You're way off. It was recorded far in the future.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree that there's not a lot to like here. And this is another one of those tracks, again, that suffers from some really tough production. Now, I'm a very big sucker for strings on songs, and I love when they bring in a string section. And the fact that they make the strings on this track sound so poor, it's kind of a slap in the face. So you got all of the strings mixed to the right channel on the stereo version and the rest of the band instrumentation on the left. And you've got Davey in the center kind of talking over everything. So they made kind of an attempt to do a stereo mix, but it's really not necessarily a true stereo mix. So it comes off sounding a little bit awkward. But I think if they had given it the proper treatment and the strings sounded as good as they possibly could and the rest of the instrumentation sounded possibly good, it may have been a better received track than it is. And I'll just leave it at that.
Craig Smith.
A couple things to say about the song. It's not a great track, but I'm not going to beat it up tremendously. But here's just a little bit of a funny story. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but at some point I was working on the Mixography website, and I was actually flipping back and forth between the 1967 and 1987 mixes of this song to find differences, at which point my girlfriend came in the room and was horrified at what was coming out of the computer speakers. So at that point, like, it was a song that, and she's not a Monkees fan, it was a song that got discussed often, and she's just like, this is creepy. Like, there's nothing romantic or charming about this at all. I'm scared. And so I would work it in, like, wherever I could. During car rides, I'd put it in playlists, unexpected. And so, you know, awesome. we would be, you know, getting ready to go to sleep, and I'd have my iPod next to the pillow, and then all of a sudden in silence, you know, so you have to make the song something bigger than it is to appreciate it. Now, having said all that,
you're no longer with that girl.
having said all that, the Monkees Golden Hits compilation, which was an LP that you could receive if you sent away cereal box tops and probably some money. One of the more rare items in the Monkees catalog, my sister owned it. So in the early 80s, when I first started watching the Monkees, I would listen to this album. And oddly enough, The Day We Fall in Love is one of the 12 songs that they choose to represent the scope of the Monkees in 1969. And so it had a place on that compilation. And so it's got a kind of special placement for me. I don't seek it out unless I'm trying to creep out a girl. And but for me, it's kind of special because it had that little place, and it was on the first Monkees LP that I ever held in my hands and listened to. So for that, I have to give it some credit.
Well, I'm going to give it some credit.
Awesome.
Carol Kay plays bass on it.
Wait, whoa. Before Craig Cohen, before you speak, can I make an impassioned plea?
Sorry.
Craig Cohen is the only person on the face of this earth who knows the song that I think is worse than this, so please don't out me on this.
I won't.
I want to hold it off for a better time.
Can you tell us and we'll take it off?
Yeah.
No.
Oh,
no,
really?
I don't
all
trust
right.
you.
Okay, all right, okay. It's secret for a reason right now.
All
right. Right?
I'll tell if we get together for some beers and some Monkees, I might let it slip to you, Craig.
How many beers will it take?
Maybe, well, I don't know, my tolerance is pretty high, so maybe 7.
All right. By the time we get to instant replay that night, you'll be good to go.
All right.
Craig Cohen, your thoughts on this song?
Despite what Jeff Hewlett says, this is the worst song that was released on a Monkees proper LP. For me, the biggest waste of this song is you have a singer as great as Davy Jones and you have him reduced to doing spoken word stuff, which to me just doesn't make sense. My perfect version of this album, this is the song you remove and replace with one of the bonus tracks on the deluxe edition.
I have some vivid memories of this song. I remember it being kind of late at night and the song coming on, and towards the end of it, the music gets kind of scary in a way. And I don't...
Time will stop.
Yes, that part right there.
Time will stop. For you and I. On the day... we fall in love.
And when you're like 5 years old, you know, that can creep a person out. Like the song In the Year 2525, that was another one.
And it's still alive.
Like, yeah, that song always was like, they're singing about the end of the world, you know, and it always creeped me out. But another memory I have is this song was playing, and my uncle came in, lifted up the needle, flipped it over, and played Stepping Stone like 3 times. Like in the same day. He just
palate cleanser.
Literally get up, take it, flip it over, put Stepping Stone on it. So it's like you wouldn't hear the last couple songs of the album.
It's hilarious.
And by the way, I just have to say, this is not the worst song that's ever been on a Monkees record. There is a song worse than this.
Sweet.
Okay, Craig Smith, what's your least favorite Monkees song?
I'll come out and say it. Okay. It's Ladies Aid Society.
Also
recorded during these sessions, and for some reason when they were trolling the vault for something to put on Monkees Present, they were like, oh, this'll do. The worst turd in the Monkees catalog.
Ouch.
Okay. All right, fine. Since Craig outed himself, I'll out myself too.
Wait, I'm strapping in, because if it's something I like, I'm going to be awfully mad.
You
know
this.
What? You feel free to take a swing at me, swing at me when we meet.
Well, wait, can I take a guess at this?
Sure, go ahead.
Is it something off Changes?
Nope.
All right, then, okay, I'm going to say that it's Never Tell a Woman Yes.
Nope.
Because I hate that, too.
That's not a great song either.
It's Reunion Era.
Oh, well, that can't count.
Yes, it does.
She's Moving In with Rico? Album.
There it is.
You know what? Let me tell you. I saw them play that in, I think, 2001.
That song is awful.
They did a show in Philly. It actually might have been Just Us. I'm not sure. They played like nothing from Pool It, but they played She's Moving In with Rico. And I looked at my friend like, are you kidding me? Like out of all this stuff that they could pull out for this show, what they're doing?
And they did it with that like reggae arrangement.
It's so schlocky and crappy. I mean, not the song itself is terrible. Lyrically, it's terrible. But they had to pick that crappy Kokomo wannabe island reggae theme for it. I mean, it doesn't even fit.
Yeah, but
like, the lyrics of the song don't fit with the instrumentation and the arrangement. It's just ridiculous. Like,
But I put Pool It stuff in a different category. I can't compare anything from Pool It to
okay,
the
I can understand where you're coming from there, and I understand that. But for me, I look at the whole body of work. I mean, I understand Mike's not in the picture, and Pool It's a little bit different. But still, it's a Monkees album. It's labeled Monkees, and I just that to me, I would rather if you put both of these songs in front of me, I would rather listen to The Day We Fall in Love.
All right, and I'm going to tell you this. Ladies Aid Society is 10 times a worse song than She's Moving In with Rico.
But true, and I will defer to that, but I think that the recording that's released on the bonus tracks on this very CD is actually okay.
Hardly saves it.
I think it's better, though. I think it's fine. I think the reimagining of it
I don't know if I'd say fine.
I think it's fine. I listened to it, and I think it sounds pretty decent. I don't know. I kind of like it.
Hmm.
Not the version on Present, the early version that was recorded around this time frame.
It's the same version. It's just edited differently. The
right.
The version on the More of the Monkees Deluxe has an extra chorus, and
and that's what ruins it for me.
So you're saying the Present version is better?
No. The alter early version is better for me.
I think the early version is longer. It's like a minute longer.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like it a little bit more. It's more palatable to me for some reason.
I'm going to give it a listen tonight. And
okay.
Would moving in with Rico work if it had been done by Gloria Estefan or Laura Branigan?
Yes, probably.
Okay, there you go.
Or Ricky Martin.
She's doing the conga with Rico.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go. All right. So,
wow.
So on the day we fall in love, it's I'm sure it's got its fans. I'm glad that you enjoy it, and I wish you all the best as you enjoy more of the Monkey Side too.
Hi, Zilch fans. This is Melanie Mitchell. Be sure to check out my book, Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. It's a lighthearted review and companion for the TV show that made the 60s fun. The paperback is available online from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and the ebook can be bought anywhere that fine ebooks are sold. Check out the Monkey Magic Facebook page, follow me on Tumblr at bluemoonalto.tumblr.com, and listen for my contributions here on Zilch, a Monkey's podcast.
Our next track, Sometime in the Morning. Now, I really like this track. I think this was really good. Craig Cohen, your thoughts on Sometime in the Morning?
It's a really good song, but this is one of the songs on the album that doesn't really, as much as we've talked about the scattershot recording schedule and songs being carried over from those first sessions, this is a song that doesn't really seem to fit with the bulk of the rest of the album, discounting the Day We Fall in Love, and maybe some of the Neil Diamond songs. But that said, it's a great song, and Mickey's vocals over his lead vocals over this entire album are nothing short of inspired.
Yeah.
For a guy who considered himself an actor playing a role, the amount of emotion that he ties to all of these vocal performances shows, I guess, his level of what a pro he was. And also just really illustrates what a great singer he was at such a young age.
Craig Smith, your thoughts?
An incredible song. The melody just carries this song, and you can't go wrong with it, especially with a voice like Mickey's who delivers it perfectly. It's one song that shines through the haze of junky production and recording and mixing, and the feeling of it shines through. Would I like to hear it crisp and clear? Yes. But until then, I'll take this version and I'll stand up for it. It's beautiful. One of Mickey's best vocal performances, without question.
Jeff, your thoughts?
This to me is the biggest gut shot in all of the Monkees catalog, because it is a beautiful lyric. It is performed by Mickey beautifully, but the production just kicks the crap out of it. And I think the version that Mickey did on his 2012 Remember album treats the song very, very well, and I wish that this treatment of the song was given the same consideration, because this, to me, is one of my favorite Monkees songs, period. It's everything that a Monkees song should be, performance-wise and lyrically, and it's a shame, and it frustrates me that we don't get a better version of this. The remaster helped a bit. It brought it up a notch as far as listening is concerned, but it's just a shame to me that they throw the background vocals on the right track and have Mickey's lead vocals kind of sometimes drift into the left track, but are mostly in the center, and all of the instrumentation is kind of just shoved into the middle and all compressed together, and you can't really pick out a lot of the detail that you know is there and that you want to hear, but you just can't get to it.
Makes sense. I think that this song, despite the production issues that you're discussing, is just perfect. What a beautiful, beautiful song. And you know, as much as I love the other three guys and the Monkees, whoever decided, let's go with Mickey Dolenz, they should just get down on their knees and thank God, because this song is perfect with him on lead vocals. On backing vocals, you got Mickey and Carole King. The song is written by Goffin and King. It's just amazing.
But the production is Goffin and King and Jeff Barry, so I don't understand what happened there. But it does suffer from some of the same issues that are on the first album and on this album as well. So I understand what you're saying. But just, they should thank God that they got a hold of Mickey Dolenz. I'll be honest with you, I don't think Mickey Dolenz ever thought of himself as being much of a singer. I don't think he ever thought he had this in him.
I mean, when you look at the arrangement of the song, like, this very easily could have been like a Davey ballad.
Oh, absolutely.
How about that Carole King tune, the Sometime of the Morning? That's again? No. Sometime in the morning, a simple thought may occur. Hold her and tell her all the things you never told her. Your love has shown me things I never thought I would see. I don't know. It could be done so easily.
Next track is Laugh. I don't understand why they didn't give this song to Peter Tork. I mean, if they already had Auntie Griselda, it just seems to kind of make sense that at least he would have known what to do with this track. To me, it just doesn't work with Davey. Who wants to take this one?
You go, Craig. I can say what I need to say after you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, I just want, what was it you said, Ken? What would make it more enjoyable? What was the end of that you said?
I said the song would have been better if Peter Tork would have sang it.
Yeah, there's nothing that would make the song more enjoyable.
Ouch.
It's not a great song. Who said man?
Me, Jeff.
It's a song I just never had anything for. I mean, for a band that's silly, and I get it, the Monkees are a silly band, but there's just a level of silliness that for me does not work on record, and the ha, 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 ha. It is so banal and insipid that this is the third skippable track on this album.
The third skippable track.
Wow. Yes.
Well, to me, if the song is supposed to be about laughter and silliness, it sounds like a depressing dirge about joy. It's like, I'm having a great time at your party. It's almost like a Cure song or something from the 80s. But I love the Cure, don't get me wrong, but they always sang about depressing stuff with real cheerful music in a way. This is the opposite. This is cheerful stuff. But,
and I mean, even I don't even like the music. Like, you could give me the instrumental track and put different lyrics on it, and I would still think it's horrible. I just think that it's not a good effort.
I do like the guitar run in it, the little... I like that part. So
wait, what was that?
You heard it.
someone isolate that.
Craig Smith.
Do you want me to tell you again how horrible it was?
Craig Cohen, your thoughts on Laugh.
One of the reasons that I wouldn't want this to be a Peter song is because Davey's vocal on this is so perfect. There's like a smoothness to it for me that really, really sells the song. I like this song a lot. I don't consider this a throwaway track at all. I think the song's got a nice sort of bounce to it. You have the great Carole Kaye on bass, of course. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. This song works for me.
Craig, the song doesn't have a bounce. What you're thinking of is Davey bouncing in the ring in the Monkees in the Ring episode while this song is playing. It is not the song. It is Davey in the boxing ring bouncing around.
There you go.
Although, having when you said that, the one thing about the song that I do like, if I may interrupt again, when he delivers the last, I believe it's the last verse, the melody kind of becomes a little more pleading sounding. Like the melody goes upward a bit, and it's changed around a little bit, and that I like, but it wasn't enough to save the song.
Jeff, your thoughts?
Wow. There's good and bad in this track, and I kind of fall more towards Craig Cohen than I do Craig Smith on this one. Yeah, I know. This, of course, is probably an example of a track on this album where they may have just as well thrown the mono mix on the stereo version of the album, because there's not a heck of a lot that goes on in the stereo mix that would make me think this is a great stereo mix of this song. One thing that's significant to this song is this is kind of the first and one of a few non-love songs by Davy Jones. You know, he's been pretty much relegated to singing songs to teenage girls, and now here he is singing a song that's not about falling in love or being in love or dating some chick. I mean, this is kind of a different spin on Davy Jones. Now, later on in the catalog, he'll do that again and in a much better fashion, in my opinion. But I don't think that this is a bad song. I do agree with Craig Smith a little bit on the insipid part with that whole ha-ha-ha part. I don't think that's necessarily a great thing in this song. It's kind of something that kind of gives it a negative slant to me. But overall, I think the lyric, it's decent, and I get where they were going with the song. I like it. It's not a song that I skip when I listen to this record. So I'm kind of in the middle on this one.
Well, like, I can dig where they're going with it. I'm just not going on that trip, man. So.
When you lose all your money, all you got to find your shoes to cover your feet.
Well, this goes to the next song and the album closer, if you will. I'm a Believer. It's one of the most well-known Monkees tracks, and written again by Neil Diamond. We have backing vocals by Mickey, Davey, and Peter, and lead vocals by Mickey, of course. And even though it says the tambourine was played by Jeff Berry, in my world, Davey's playing that tambourine.
Like, oh, thank God you're not writing the Monkees sessionographies in these CDs.
Yeah, because it would be like, and you know, the Monkees are on every track.
As reimagined by Ken Mills.
Yes, yes. Well, that's how it is in our head, though. I mean, you just...
Well, totally.
You know, you become a little 14-year-old fan and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
But, it's great that the archivist have unearthed all these great facts, and it's cool and all, but...
You know, Ken, I will side with you on this one, because I can remember the incredible amount of disappointment that fell over my face when I found out that Mike did not play the guitar solo on Valerie.
It's very convincing in the episode.
I wanted to believe that it was him, and I thought that it was him, and when I found out that it wasn't, I was crushed.
And you went to your room and cried. And
I did. I still have the wet pillowcase.
And Gene Simmons played bass on every Kiss song.
He did.
Yes, there you go. So what do you guys think of I'm a Believer? Who wants to take lead? Okay, Craig Smith.
The quintessential pop hit, right? I mean, you can't go... the organ lick in itself, just opening up the song, and the little, that little rolling guitar, and just... It's a great track. And again, it's... My childhood plays into it, but you can't argue with a number one single, and a good one at that. It's, and also coincidentally, recorded the same day as Look Out, Here Comes Tomorrow.
Yes.
So both of those Neil Diamond tracks recorded the same day. Mm-hmm. A great performance by Mickey. And if you want to, interestingly, I believe that they recently found the multi-tracks for this. All these years, this song could not be remixed because the multi-tracks were lost. On the deluxe edition, there's a remix, but it has a different vocal. Because the vocal on the tape that does survive is the only thing that they could remix into stereo. The final multi-track with the final vocal was missing for many, many years. So the stereo remix features an alternate vocal track. But yeah, great song. It's such a part of pop culture that it's hard to even talk about it and dissect it because it just is. It's always there.
Mm-hmm. It's weird because there are some Monkey fans that I've run into that whenever you mention I'm a Believer, they'll go, yeah, it's good, but, you know, it's kind of like overplayed and, you know, it's not my favorite. You guys run into that occasionally?
I fall into that group.
You fall in? Yeah, okay.
I totally understand that. And you know what? If I'm making a Monkey CD to listen to in the car, this is not one of the first 30 tracks that goes on.
Well, it depends on who's in the car.
Well, that's true, too. But if I'm controlling the radio, what I say goes. But it doesn't make it a great song. But, yeah, songs get overplayed, and you don't want to hear them. But the thing about something like that is if you're a Monkees fan and you go for the deeper cuts, and I consider myself one of those people, when you hear it on the radio, it's a treat. You know, when you're out somewhere and it comes on, it's like, yeah, you know. You take it when it's given to you. You don't necessarily seek it out. You know what I mean?
And this, along with the theme from the Monkees, is one of the greatest things you can sit and watch drunk people do karaoke to. Because they will ruin it every single time. And Craig Cohen, your thoughts closing out this album, your favorite Monkees album, I'm a Believer.
Yeah, I think this is a great closing track. And to sort of keep with the Jeff Hewlett sort of concept album theory, this works as a perfect third song to She and I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. This almost wraps back around and, you know, validates the feelings that he had at the beginning. So I think it works that way conceptually, if you want to go there.
And the Monkees are looking at you in their JCPenney catalog from that angle. Go on.
Saying
where's the fantasy sequence where he's like lamenting and singing Sometime in the Morning?
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle?
Holding the album as he's...
After Stepping Stone, before I'm a Believer.
There you go.
That's a good little EP right there.
There you go.
Not really much more to say. I think you and Craig pretty much illustrated most people's thoughts on this song.
To me, this track has so much energy, though, that it would almost make you want to flip the album over again because it, like, picks right up again at the end.
Yeah. There's, like, 2 dozen cover versions of this as well.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Probably more. I mean, you get down to it.
In the 60s alone, there were, 4 or 5 versions.
Yeah.
You're very particular about your covers.
Yes, I am.
And even the ones on your bed.
Not so much those.
Oh, okay.
So I love what Craig said about this being the end of the trilogy. I didn't think of it that way, but it's a great sentiment that Mickey has learned to love again at the end of More of the Monkees, even after having to sit through The Day We Fall in Love, knowing that Davey's scoring all the chicks. But this song, again, this is one of the iconic Monkees tracks, along with the theme and Clarksville. I think if I had to choose, I would pick Clarksville over this as the iconic songs go. This isn't a bad song. It's a great, great song. But once again, it suffers a little bit from some rough production. The background vocals are a bit overdriven for me, and it kind of bugs my ear. But hearkening back to the alternate mix that Craig Smith was talking about that's on this bonus CD, listening to that version of this song kind of revitalized me on this track quite a bit. And I may be doing the Craig Cohen style playlist version of this album and subbing the original version for that alternate mix, because to my ears it sounds so much better. Despite the fact that it is an alternate vocal, especially detectable in the trail out at the end of the song, you can definitely tell that it's a different vocal.
Yeah.
I think that version to my ears is preferable over the original release.
Saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
it's a very good album. It's got a few low spots for our panel, but some really bright, bright spots as well. And as we said, I'm a Believer held the number one position on Billboard's Hot 100, so not bad, not bad. The group began to grow concerned over their musical output, since this album and their debut, The Monkees, featured them limited to just vocals with scattered instrumental contributions. Kirshner had a strict rule that the Monkees were to provide only vocals on his productions. Those separate sessions produced by Michael Nesmith himself usually featured Peter Tork on guitar. More of the Monkees has Nesmith limited to just one song as lead vocalist. Within weeks of the release of More of the Monkees, Nesmith lobbied successfully with the group's creators Bob Ravelson and Bert Schneider for the Monkees to be allowed to play their instruments on future records, effectively giving the quartet artistic control. To make his point clear, Kirshner, who was balking at the idea, Nesmith proceeded to punch a hole in the wall of a suite at a Beverly Hills hotel during a group meeting with Kirshner and Cold Gem's lawyer, Herb Mollis, declaring to the latter, "That could have been your face." This outburst came after Mollis snapped to Nesmith, "You better read your contract," when Nesmith threatened to quit. Kirshner was later dropped from the project altogether. This album kind of led to that event happening.
You know, just something, while you were talking about that, I was kind of looking at the sessionography, and it's interesting to note, the one Nesmith vocal on this album was a song that they pulled from June during the sessions for the first album. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like Mike did any vocals on any songs past Papa Jean's Blues and Sweet Young Thing.
So was he limiting his involvement?
Yeah, I mean, I've never quite looked at it this way, but after Sweet Young Thing, July 18th, 1966, there's nothing else that he takes a lead on.
Wait, I could be wrong, and you probably know more about this than I did, but wasn't there a session on July 25th of 66 where he did Of You?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. So July. Yeah, that would be the last one.
Which didn't make it onto this album and is a fantastic song, by the way.
Correct. And again, recorded the same day as Last Train to Clarksville. So again, that could have been, you know, first album sessions proper. But after that, there's the possibility that there are, you know, I would have to consult Andrew Sandoval's book to take a look at the sessions and see what songs we haven't heard. But I don't think there are too many from around this time. And I don't know that there are any with a Mike vocal. So it's interesting that between July and November, when the bulk of this album was recorded, there were no songs of his. And nothing that he took a lead vocal on after Of You in July.
But one thing we don't know for sure, though, is what was in the pool of songs that were to be recorded or being offered to the Monkees that could have been offered to Mike for vocals but weren't.
Right.
So we know that they heavily favored Mickey and Davey in all of those sessions. So maybe sure. Mike was also kind of pissed that he wasn't chosen for non-Nesmith songs.
Yeah, and I guess at this point,
theorizing.
Yeah. I mean, it's all speculation, but I mean, it fits in with the story.
I think it's it was a necessary step in their career, and I think it's what makes their career so interesting because it allowed us to get a lot of really different music. You've got this real sort of bubblegum pop, whatever you want to call the first two albums. But then you've got the albums where they had a little bit more input. So as much as I love the early albums, I think the next logical step they needed to take was sort of taking a little bit more control of their destiny, if you will. So for me, it was a neat, necessary step for them.
Had this not happened, I'm not sure we'd be talking about the Monkees today.
I agree with that, Ken.
Yeah, I do too.
If I had an opportunity to meet Mike Nesmith in person, I think I would thank him for this moment, because the next four Monkees albums after this are desert island albums for me. They would be albums that I would not want to be without. I think that this particular moment was a pivotal point that gave way for the next four albums in their career to be done. And I think all four are fantastic records.
I look forward to speaking about them because they are all incredible records, the next four. And I'm even on board after that. But the string of four, it's pretty damn perfect.
The table is set for what many feel are the best Monkey albums to come. So there we are. So we really want to encourage folks to buy Rhino's deluxe re-release of More of the Monkees. You really can't go wrong, folks. And no, we don't work for Rhino, but we just want you to do the right thing. So pick up the best version of this album that there is and enjoy it. So
yeah, and even without the bonus tracks, you get the stereo and the mono mix, so you can really hear a lot of what we debated over the course of the two album sides.
Another great discussion on another great album. I thank everyone for listening and spending some of your valuable time with us. We know your time is valuable, and we just hope that we're doing a good service by you, the Monkees, and Rhino, and everybody that loves the Monkees. This is your show. This is your Monkees Audio fanzine, and we're just hoping to do the best by everybody. So we thank you for your time. We know it's valuable.
So, think it's about time to call it a podcast, guys?
Woo! We know it.
What else would we call it?
Yeah, that's true. We could mm-hmm. call it a shoe, but it wouldn't fit.
It would be a really good shoe.
That's right. Well, will you join us in singing Here We Come Walking Down the Street like we do?
Oh, dear. I was afraid you were going to ask me to do that.
I'm just...
Certainly.
Coolness.
Bye.
Zilch, take some time to monkey around.
Here we come. Walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
We're dealing with infantile minds, like myself. The group began to grow concerned over their musical output. Take two.